Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks. As we continue our countdown to the end of 2021, it's time to take a look back at what a year it has been for the world of fixed income, both in developed countries and in emerging markets, as well as high yield. We had a tricky 12 months in fixed income as the markets debated when the post-pandemic stimulus would be wound down, when and how rates would finally start rising again, and how sticky inflation might be. Economics 101 suggests that when interest rates and inflation go up, that's not, usually not great for bonds, but it's a complicated picture. We thought we were steadily emerging from the pandemic, but then as we record this, the Omicron variant has put wobbles into the market again, sending investors away from risky assets and into safe havens. I'm Keith Campbell, and joining me to discuss all this are Matthew Rees, the head of global bond strategies here at LGIM, and Raza Agha, head of emerging markets credit strategy. Matthew, Raza, how are you?
Thank you, Keith. Great to be here.
Great to be here as well, Keith. Thank you very much.
So I'm going to start with Raza. When you look back at 2021, what were the most notable trends in your investment world? What surprised you?
So it's been a difficult year in EM credit markets. To give you a sense for just how tough it's been, the EM sovereign credit benchmark is down 3.3% this year, total return-wise. While EM corporates have generated just 40 basis points of returns year to date. In sovereigns, that's the worst performance you've had since 2018, and it's one of only 6 years in the last 27 where returns have been negative. The hit's been pretty indiscriminate. Within sovereigns, for example, the impact of turbulent markets has been across both the investment grade and high yield buckets. IG's slightly underperformed, but not by much. Where there is a difference in performance is in the duration buckets. The hardest hit has been the 10-year plus bucket, which is down nearly 7% year-to-date. The short end of the curves have outperformed, particularly the 1 to 3 year maturities, which has generated actually positive returns just shy of 1.3%. And 3 to 5 year is more or less flat.
So what's the driving reasons for all that movement?
So in our view, three factors have been meaningful. You know, first, the move in U.S. rates as growth and inflation rebounded from COVID lows. Highlighting this, on average, U.S. rates are up about 50 basis points year to date and about 80 basis points from August last year. And that's brought dollar strength, which is a second factor, particularly from the middle of this year. And that's hit EM local currency fixed income markets particularly hard. They're down about 10.7% year to date, and that's their second worst performance since inception. And the third factor has been this new variant. I mean, almost the entire move in EM credit spreads has been since mid-November, driven by fears around the new variant amidst very thin market liquidity.
So for now, it's all about the Omicron. Matthew, how is it different or how is it the same in the markets that you focus on?
Yeah, I mean, as you said earlier, Keith, it's Economics 101 suggests that when interest rates go up, it's not good for bonds. And similar to what Raza was saying about duration impacts, that's been reflected in negative total returns for investment grade. That's from around about minus 3.5% in global investment grade at the aggregate level, to kind of around about minus 2% in sterling and minus 1.4% in US credit. However, as we've said, almost all of this has been the impact of the rise in government bond yields. So excess returns from pure credit have been positive of around about 1% in US and sterling investment grade, whereas European investment grade credit has been marginally negative, particularly following the moves at the end of last week from the Omicron virus coming out. But there's been a lot more going on under the hood that's been surprising, both in govies as well as credit. So if you told me at the beginning of the year that annual inflation in the US and Germany would be around 6% by now, which is incredible, could anyone have predicted that real yields would remain solidly negative across all government bonds?
The textbook is telling you it's going to happen, right?
That's it, exactly. It's just crazy. And then government bond curves would flatten when most people expect a steepening. And this last move has caught many macro funds on the hop recently. In credit, if you'd said there'd be the new COVID variant and that the US Fed was about to start tapering, but US credit spreads are basically flat on the year. And then in contrast, the European credit market where the ECB is buying up around about a third of eligible non-financial bonds, would be about 20 basis points wider. So one of the explanations for these strange moves in credit is, as Raza has talked about in the past, huge stock of negative yielding debt, and that's largely in Japanese and European bond markets. And so many Asian and European investors have had strong demand for US credit and strong demand for yield. And that's contributed towards the big divergence between positive US high yield returns of around about 3.5% and the negative emerging market total returns that Raza has described.
So with this as our backdrop, why don't we turn to some of the themes that are likely to be dominating 2022? What are the opportunities that you guys see? I mean, Matthew, I might start with you. I guess it depends really on an assessment of what stage of the economic cycle we think we're in, right?
Yeah, that is exactly it. It's the key thing to assess. We discuss a lot about what stage we're in and when does the market start worrying about recession. Which is at the moment is not in anybody's forecast, but at some point during next year, we think it might be, as we start to enter towards more late cycle economies and late cycle behaviours start to be exhibited. We've already seen some late cycle behaviours such as large scale M&A with, for example, the private equity bid for Telecom Italia. Also, we worry about what does it say about terminal interest rates and how far the Fed can raise rates. And that's where the government bond curve movement, where it's actually been flattening at the long end, shows the market thinks that the Fed will not be able to raise rates that much. We also really worry about real yields, whether they do rise, whether that tightens financial conditions. So the Fed has been buying approximately 60% of the US TIPS market, so the inflation protected market, over the last 12 months. What happens to real yields in the US TIPS when they stop buying that, when they taper? And does that tighten financial conditions a lot? That particularly could hit the equity market and the growth sector within the equity market, and that could depress overall market sentiment. So there's plenty of things to think about with the cycle.
Yeah. I mean, in the meantime, there's the issue of US credit quality. I mean, what's the situation with that at the current moment?
It really is impressively strong. So you've had a massive rebound in earnings after the COVID crisis. And also actually the increase in inflation that we talked about really does help. So we've seen huge increases in nominal revenues and nominal EBITDA, which means that there's huge amounts of positive cash flow going around for US corporates. And also there's actually massive amounts of cash flow around for a large segment of the US population with very high excess savings rates. So that's all been pretty positive. But obviously, what do companies do with all those earnings? Do they use it towards debt reduction, which they have been, but they use it increasingly towards stock buybacks and M&A. And that's what has been happening more recently. And then also we worry about US retail sales. Do they remain bulletproof due to the high savings rates, but consumer confidence has been going down?
So Raza, what about emerging market credit in 2022? What opportunities do you think people should be watching out for?
So we're focusing on three themes for next year. Given the outlook for rates and inflation, 2022 will be the year for high yield, provided commodity prices hold. More broadly, EM spreads are now flat to what they were in US during US elections. And that's before the vaccinations kicked in. And just to give you a sense for how attractive valuations are, yields on the sovereign index that we follow is nearly 5.5%, while for high yield, it's above 8%. So valuations are compelling at the moment, which sets us up nicely for next year. On that, macro-wise, IMF EM growth projections of over 5% in 22 suggests that emerging markets will continue to outperform their pre-COVID growth levels. In the meantime, fiscal deficits will continue to moderate, and the addition to EM debt levels, which by the way are half those in DM, will continue to be modest. Secondly, commodity prices are still supportive, and that means many countries, particularly in the EM high yield space, will see balance sheets and ratings improve. the latter because, you know, ratings tend to move with a bit of a lag. And we've already seen this happen in recent weeks in Angola, Gabon, Kazakhstan, Oman, and Nigeria. These positive rating moves could be a meaningful driver of spread compression going forward. And finally, I think one of the main lessons from 2021 has been that technicals remain quite critical in the EMD space. Now, that means, you know, avoiding large issuers in markets, focusing on playing them tactically, and being long in curves where there is potential for liability management and where local investors also participate.
Got it. Well, that's the bull case. There are tail risks out there as well, and I'm wondering what's lurking and what you think that that people should keep an eye out for, Raza.
Yeah. So again, you know, there's a couple of things that we're watching. First, you know, any COVID surprises, you know, like the ones we've seen, any new variants or waves, which if sustained, could impact EM growth, you know, and US rates and obviously flows to emerging markets.
The CEO of Moderna is suggesting that new vaccines would be needed. So that's kind of hitting us today, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think what's important is EM vaccination rates are rising. Vaccination supply is improving. You know, we've just seen announcements from India that they'll be resuming exports of their vaccines to the COVAX initiative, which is a key source of vaccines for over 90 emerging and low-income economies. Similarly, you've seen China pledge another billion vaccines to Africa, 400 million of which will be jointly produced. And even beyond the vaccines, Keith, I think what's important to bear in mind is that unlike the situation in Q1 2020, EMs have now been through multiple waves and are hence experienced in dealing with COVID. And finally, you know, it's also important that, you know, if there are unanticipated developments or protracted waves, you know, that will bring policy action, which will help flows to emerging markets, you know, at a time when valuations, like I said, are pretty attractive. Beyond COVID, the other risk that we focus on is U.S. rates, you know, which would bring sustained dollar strength, which could then impact commodity prices. That's a problem because much of EM remains a commodity play.
That's the flip side of what you were saying earlier, right? So you start getting some negative impacts on budgets if things go wrong.
Absolutely. I mean, lower prices would filter through to the macro via external accounts, which is the balance of payments, public finances, and hence, you know, debt levels. But again, the flip side of that argument is that, you know, sustained concerns around new waves or, you know, significant price action in commodity markets will bring action by commodity producers. So, for example, in oil, you could see OPEC Plus take measures that could impact supply, which should prove supportive.
Finally, on China, is that part of the profile of risks that you look at for 2022?
I mean, the situation in China is something that we've been following pretty closely, particularly the regulatory changes in the recent past. These measures have been driven by both the Common Prosperity Agenda, which focuses on sort of addressing inequality in the country. And it's also driven by a need to find new drivers of growth as China shifts from an investment to consumption-led growth. Now, you know, our view is that, you know, some of these measures have led to a sharp impact in parts of their bond market, in real estate, for example. But it's important to remember that, you know, the Chinese authorities have emphasized that reaching the goals of common prosperity is more a medium to long-term objective. And secondly, you know, while the objectives of regulatory reforms may not change, but that doesn't mean that they'll allow important sectors of the economy to face unmitigated challenges. And this is particularly true in real estate, which, you know, accounts for over a quarter of the Chinese economy and is the largest portion of Chinese household wealth and savings. And, you know, a final point I will also make is that, you know, we're looking at the 20th CCP plenary in the second half of next year, where we're looking for the continuity in Chinese leadership. So in that context, we anticipate the authorities will be sensitive to not take measures that could, you know, extend or create social challenges.
Matthew, let's finish up with you. What are some of the left field events or black swans that you're watching out for?
Yeah, I think one of the things that in the past has hit emerging markets has been food price inflation. And actually, I think there could be some very bad increases in food price inflation that actually don't just hit emerging markets, but actually hit developed markets as well. So we've seen a massive increase in the price of ammonia, which is a key feedstock for fertilizers. And I think that could become a source of popular uprisings across developed markets as well as emerging markets as a black swan event. However, that does probably then lead to increased fiscal support from governments, which will turn down this year compared to the amazing fiscal support we've had. But the governments, particularly with some election cycles coming up, say in France and also in the US, mean that they will go out and you know, put the fiscal prompts going again. Another thing that we're concerned about is a return of stress in the Eurozone. If we do see real upswings in, you know, in non-transitory inflation, then there will be some pressure on the European Central Bank to consider tapering, and that could have an impact on spreads in the periphery yet again. We think it'll be relatively contained, but there still could be some volatility around that. And then lastly, we also do wonder about whether some of the kind of capital rationing that has happened already in the oil and gas sector and then now is increasing because of understandable ESG concerns could lead to kind of very, very high oil prices. Say, yeah, there've been some commentators saying oil could reach $150 over the next year or two. That again could lead to inflation spikes, you know, an economic disruption in oil importing countries. So again, your ability to really differentiate, as Raza was saying, between those countries that will get hit by this and some will benefit, and also what the fiscal and political reaction to that will be.
Got it. Well, here's hoping that 2022 sees us avoid a return of stress. And I also am wishing a lack of stress to anybody spending time with their families around the dinner table over the holidays. Raza and Matthew, thank you for joining me on LGM Talks. And thank you to all of our listeners. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, we're also going to be bringing you several other outlooks on the pod in the weeks to come, discussing real assets, liability-driven investment, and asset allocation. Do listen out for those.